The health service executive says it's working hard to address a shortage of testing materials for COVID-19 after confirmation this week that the total number of tests being carried out is well short of the target number of 5,000 per day. In a message on Twitter overnight, HSE boss Paul Reid said the current major issue is reagents for labs. He said there's a worldwide shortage and appealed to the public to bear with us. So far, the testing program has identified 3,447 cases of the infection here, with 85 deaths linked to the virus. At a briefing yesterday evening, Deputy Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ronan Glynn gave more details on the cases identified as of midnight on Monday.
Amongst those cases, there was 134 clusters involving 563 people. The median age of the cases was 48 years. And there was a 50-50 split between males and females. 834 cases were hospitalised and 126 had been admitted to intensive care. Community transmission amongst the cases stood at 60% as of Monday night.
Now, I'm joined by our science correspondent, George Lee. George, good morning to you and thanks for talking to us this morning.
Morning,
perhaps, first of all, we can have a word about this tweet overnight from Paul Reid and his appeal to the public to bear with us. They're trying to source what seem to be, on a worldwide basis, actually quite short supplies of reagents for carrying out and completing the tests for COVID-19. Now, can you explain to us, what are these reagents? Why are they so important and what's been done to try and source supplies of it?
Well, there are three stages, I think, in the testing process. One is the testing kits, two is the testing stations, and three would be what goes on in the lab. And obviously we know in relation to the testing kits that there was a shortage of that first that we didn't really have enough. And that is the same no matter which country you're in, that has been an issue globally. There's been a rush to find them. Remember, the virus is very new and the testing for it had to be ramped up, and certainly the kits weren't available for everybody and the demand that was there. The second, in relation to the testing stations, we started off with a few. People firstly had to go to ambulances, or the ambulance service would come to you and do the test, and then we opened up one or two testing stations, and now there's 41 in various places all over the country. They're hoping to ramp that up to 50. And the third bit was what went on in the laboratory, and there are two aspects in terms of the laboratory. One, there is a buffer, which is some kind of chemical agent which is put in with your swab and so on, which I don't know chemically whatever it does. It's called a buffer anyway. The second one is called a reagent, and what that does is it looks at what you were trying to get, which is this virus, and it causes it, I presume, to react in some way so that you know that it's there. That, according to a briefing we got earlier this week, is a proprietorial substance. That means you can't just produce it yourself. Maybe it's under a patent or something like that. And so as a result of that, there is a shortage. And it's the shortage that's global. And the HSE, as much as anybody else, is looking for that, just like they're doing in all other countries. And because of that backlog and because of that shortage as such, that's why there's a problem with labs. So you could have had a problem at any point on that testing range, whether it is for the kits, the testing centres, or what goes on in the lab. And there were problems at the testing kits, and there's problems clearly in relation to finding that proprietorial chemical agent, which is described as a reagent. And what the HSE is saying, we will get it, that we would have much preferred to have much more testing done at this stage than we have, but we're going to get there. And as far as we're concerned, we're still going to ramp up our testing from currently 1,500 per day to what they're hoping to be 15,000 per day within the next month or so, if they can get this. So they're just saying to people that we're still on the job and we're really desperate to get this material.
The number of confirmed cases, I think it's fair to say, isn't increasing significantly at this stage. In fact, I think the number yesterday was lower than the number the previous day. But to what extent is that then a reflection of this level of testing, less than the health authorities would like, rather than a picture of the spread of the infection? In other words, is it far too soon to say that we're flattening the curve?
I don't think at all it's too soon we're flattening the curve because of other indicators, and most particularly the indicator which is when we or when they test somebody positive and they look to see who their close contacts have been, they find that instead of being 20, which is about 2.5 weeks ago or thereabouts, it had fallen to 5 and now it's fallen to 3. So that people are definitely not out and about mixing as much as they were, and that reduces the opportunity for this virus to spread, which is one of the key things when you're trying to calculate its reproduction rate. We also know that people definitely are washing their hands and engaging in cough etiquette and social distancing as well, and that reduces the probability of the transmission. So the two of those are key issues in relation to the reproduction rate of the virus. So there's no question, I think, among any experts, that we certainly are having a very big effect. So when you look at the numbers, and as you say, the number yesterday was 212 new cases, and that's down from 325 the previous day and 295 the day before that. It can go up and down, and it may well be a reflection in relation to backlogs on testing. It may not, we don't know, but it's the other indicators. You put them all together to know whether or not you're actually bending the curve. And the other thing in relation to those numbers is that they're not awfully significant in terms of what the HSE is doing. They know from the number of people who need to be hospitalised, and they know from the number of people who need to be in ICU what the, that's a better reflection for them.
And I wanted to ask you about admissions to ICU, and to give us a sense of the picture there. How much greater are the numbers presenting for admission to intensive care, and what might be expected compared to a normal period, you know, when we're not in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah. Well, there, the number yesterday in terms of ICU was 126 people. And to give you an idea, about a week ago, that was 29. So 29 on Sunday week last. And say it's gone up from 39 exactly one week. So the numbers in ICU, intensive care units in hospitals, have been rising quite sharply and quite in a very short period of time. In terms of, and in addition to that, we know that there are people, because we heard from one of the ICU consultants, Dr. Catherine Motherway, that there were 26 people who she referred to earlier in the week who had not tested positive. So they're not included in the 126, but they are in ICU, and they believe that those people are suffering from the effects of the COVID virus. So a lot of extra people are in there potentially. So that's a big draw on the resources of the hospitals. And also, 834 cases have been hospitalised up to and including those 126. So it is a big draw on the HSE and hospital services at this point.
Right. Just very briefly, in the last moment or two, George, the Cabinet Subcommittee meeting today to assess the restrictions. I presume we're not looking at any relaxation, obviously, at this stage.
Not at all. But obviously, every day they're looking at what the impact of those restrictions are, what they might need to do to address some of the issues which may or may have arisen. And also, there's, you know, when you look at the National Public Health Emergency Team, and they're making recommendations on a regular basis. So they're looking at issues in relation to what can they do in response to what's coming from that. For instance, we know from this week that there are issues about transmission of the disease among healthcare workers. And yes, what was interesting about that is that it was only a quarter of the transmission among healthcare workers was in any way linked to their work. Three quarters was outside of work. And as a result of that, then they're looking at, well, what can we do with healthcare workers in the community? Maybe some decisions can be made there and elsewhere.
All right, George, for the moment, thank you very much indeed for that.